So I had not heard the podcast before because I didn't know how to listen to podcasts.
Yeah.
Yeah. And my fellow showed me how to do it. And then so I was finally able to listen. It was so delightful.
Oh, I'm so glad.
With Noor. I have not met Noor, probably because she's in Cancer Epi. Boy, she seemed so funny. So no,
it's wonderful
that you're doing this. This is really fun.
Thank you. Now
I know how to do it. Well, and I see them pop up on Twitter and I'm like, I wonder how one listens to a podcast.
Hi, everyone. I'm Lisa Bodner. Welcome back to Shiny Epi People. Are you sick of me telling you yet that the show can be found on Instagram and Twitter at Shiny Epi People and that I post additional content there? If you're tired of it, tough shit, you guys. This is how I get my show out. We're also at Patreon at patreon.com. Share the show with your friends. It's really helpful for me. Today, I'm speaking with Mercy Carnathan. Mercy's research seeks to understand the role that health behaviors, such as diet, physical activity, and sleep, play in health across the life course. The outcomes that Mercy studies are cardiovascular disease, obesity, diabetes, lung health, and cognitive aging. Mercy got her PhD at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill in the year 2000, and she did a postdoctoral fellowship after that at Stanford University School of Medicine. Mercy is now a professor and vice chair of the Department of Preventive Medicine at Northwestern University. Not only does Mercy have a major research program, but she also has significant experience in administration, including having difficult conversations at work and managing conflict. This is something that I struggle with so much, not just at work, but also in my personal life. And in this episode, Mercy gives so many helpful tips, you may want to get out your pen and paper. Mercy is also so committed to service activities. She is an associate editor at Circulation. She has numerous leadership roles in both the American Diabetes Association and the American Heart Association. But the service I wanted to talk with her about was her role as chair and as a standing member of the study section, Kidney, Nutrition, Obesity, and Diabetes at the NIH. Mercy shares grant writing and reviewing tips, more pencil paper note taking that you might consider. Penny Gordon Larson, who was my guest in the second episode of Shiny Epi People, suggested I talk with Mercy based on their relationship working on study section together. I'm so glad that Mercy could take time out of her super busy schedule to join me today. I hope you enjoy this chat.
Well, hi, Lisa. It is great to see you again.
Oh, how nice it looks behind you.
I got a 9 out of 10 from the Room Raider person.
Wait.
Yeah, the Room Raider person on Twitter. My stat analyst sent me a note and said that I got a 9 out of 10. And they said, or maybe it was either a 10, but they said, and bonus points for the triptych. And I was like, what's a triptych? And it's this 3-part picture that my postdoc took that I printed at Costco. So, and I didn't even have the false orchid then. And I just recently from Amazon, does it look real? The orchid?
Yes, it totally looks real.
Thank you. I've had a very obnoxious day because it snowed maybe 18 inches. And so they wouldn't take the kids away from me. And I was like, you know what? I can do this for one day. And I'm just so annoyed. I'm so, my level of irritation is so high right now. You know, my daughter today told the teacher that today has been great. And she said, well, what's been making it great, Emery? She said, my mother gave me popcorn and gum all day. And I was like, you're killing me. Please be quiet because I try to promote healthy lifestyles. And I was like, I did. I just left her with a bowl of popcorn at one because I needed to interview someone. There were a couple meetings I had to do.
So yeah. I'm always like,
no judgments.
Grab some Hershey Kisses. Go upstairs.
Yes. My kids talk to me. I'm an extrovert and I talk a lot and I'm so tired of talking. Like they just are, they've been talking to me all day about inane stuff.
My 9-year-old can't speak to me without saying mommy and then waiting for me to answer.
Yes.
And then talking.
No, mine says, mommy, can I ask you a question?
Just ask it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mommy, I just want my one. I just want to eat one meal alone.
I know. Just one.
Yeah, without people talking to me.
I don't want to clean up the kitchen.
Can I tell you, over the course of 11 months now, do you know how many lunches?
No.
And just the cycle of cleaning the kitchen.
Yes.
You know, I ordered school lunch for them. And in the beginning, because they're a little bit fussy, I would say, well, how was school lunch? And then after a week of asking how school lunch was, I realized I don't care. You know, like they're in the 90th percentile, at least for weight and, you know, and height. So they're growing. I'm not making you lunch. So yes. Yeah. Uh-huh. So no, I'm really looking forward to this.
I would like to make your day a little bit better.
Let's end on a good note. Thanks.
Mercy, I wanted to talk to you about having difficult conversations.
Yes.
Because I'm really bad at this. Mm-hmm. Penny Gordon Larson told me that you were so good at this.
I don't know about that. I mean, at work, it's interesting to have a difficult conversation because often it feels a little bit formulaic, depending on if I'm in the middle of the difficult situation, it's obviously harder than if I'm advising someone on the difficult situation.
Okay.
And so it's interesting. I took a class in mediation and have a certificate in mediation, which is a form of alternative dispute resolution. And the reason I thought that it would be helpful to have that skill is that as a mentor, and in my mentoring work and in my faculty development work, I do talk with a lot of people who are facing challenging situations. Mm-hmm. And it came really naturally to me to start with, so, you know, what's the outcome that you would like to have? What's the outcome that you think is most likely to happen? So, you know, sometimes it's hard because people have been wronged and they truly have been wronged and they've been wronged by somebody in power where the outcome that you would love to see this person fired or this person embarrassed. Yes, that's what we'd love to see. What would be an acceptable outcome?
Mm-hmm.
You know, because by the time you get to, well, how likely is it that this person will be walked to the door over that? That's kind of when the defeat comes in of they're never going to get fired.
Right.
Okay. So then what's the next best situation? And as an observational epidemiologist,
yeah,
with no interpersonal counseling training, it just seemed intuitive to try to get the individual to tell me what they think would happen to get them to the solution rather than me telling them the answer, in part because I could tell you, but I'm telling you from my perspective. It might be something that I'm comfortable doing, but that they're not. And so then it's just a series of asking questions and getting to the point, the core of the problem. And I think what I learned from the mediation training is that, you know, you attack the problem, not the people. Mm-hmm. And how can we work together to address this situation? Mm-hmm. So it's really, I find it, it's actually one of my favorite parts of my job. And if I, you know, if my scientific program were to fall apart, I would very much enjoy this interpersonal aspect of helping people achieve their best.
Can you give me a couple of examples where it was actually you that needed to confront someone?
Oh my God. Let me tell you my absolute failure one year ago.
Yeah,
in
please.
Confronting someone. It was ridiculous how poorly I handled this situation.
Okay.
Another friend of mine who was a department chair said that she hires someone to come in the morning, get the kids ready, and take them to school. And so the first year we had somebody reliable. They were wonderful. Year two, I was having trouble finding somebody. So I took this individual who, when I interviewed her, she told me a number of things that were, you know, a little sketchy, namely that she'd been, you know, fired immediately from her last job and they hadn't even asked for the car seats back. And I was like, that's $400 worth of car seats. They wanted you gone badly enough and they gave you one day's notice. And I was like, but you're probably great. But in desperation and with a pending trip the following week, I was like, you know what? We're going to give it a shot. anyhow, she had a series of things where it became clear she needed to go, but I was having trouble letting her go because I was like, what am I going to do? I have to travel in 2 days. And it took my mentor at work, Phil Greenland. And I was like, Phil, what am I going to do? I've got to go to this AHA meeting. And this sitter is terrible. I tried to call her last night to say, I don't think this is going to work out. And then she talked me out of letting her go. And he was like, Mercy, sit down. You needed to fire someone who is taking care of your children. And you let her talk you out of firing her? He was like, no, this is a firm conversation. And he said, what did I say? When it's not a negotiation, don't make it a negotiation. And I was like, you know, that's true.
If it's not, I need to remember that.
Yeah, if it's not
even
a negotiation.
With my fucking kids.
Seriously, if it's not a negotiation, don't make it one. Yeah, I mean, it was hard. And it was harder than I had remembered to just sit down and say it. And I think the barrier that a lot of us put up is we don't think to ourselves, So before you start the conversation, what's the worst thing that's going to happen in this conversation? And quite often, it's not that the person's going to get up and stab you. Now, if it is, you know, you should keep that in mind, right? Like, right. I mean, and, you know, are they going to fire you immediately? Or are they just going to talk to you and ask you questions and or argue back? And, you know, in that regard, have you done your homework to justify your position? And if you approach the discussion, many conversations, and it really depends on the situation who you're dealing with, but if you approach it calmly with the mindset of we're here to talk about the problem and how we can work together to address the problem so that you can get what you want and I can get what I want, I think it removes barriers to what can be an awkward discussion. I think with maturity over time, I'm learning to not react immediately, and I'm learning because just last week I got a pointed text message about something, and I was thinking that I'm not really in the wrong here. However, this is a good person who sent this to me. This person is under stress, and it's probably easier just to apologize and let things cool off and then try to present my rationale for why I had approached the situation that way, because it wasn't worth long-term offense because people have bad days. And so, you know, and that wasn't a position that I took even 6-7 years ago. I think I would have been a lot more defensive. I think as the number of responsibilities has piled on, I've decided that it's most important to pick my battles and not get into little skirmishes.
A lot of colleagues and friends struggle, including myself, we struggle with how to work with students or trainees who, you know, maybe aren't living up to a standard. How do you have hard conversations?
Like- yes, that is very hard. So do you remember the movie, you know, with George Clooney in it called Up in the Air, where he flew around? His role was to fly around firing people.
Yes.
The approach that he used is, I'm going to give you an opportunity to pursue your passions. Tell me what you love doing. You know, if you're not performing well or doing well, this may not be the right role or job for you. And to help you find a place in which you can excel, because it doesn't feel good to come to work every day. You know you're underperforming. I mean, the harder case is the arrogant individual who thinks they're amazing and they're terrible. That's a hard one. But, you know, a lot of times these individuals who are underperforming, they're not happy. It's uncomfortable for them. They start dodging you, not coming to work, you know, skipping out on things, obviously missing deadlines. And it's worth approaching it with the mindset of, I want to help you be happy. I want to help you feel successful. I'm not a big fan of the compliment sandwich because individuals who don't want to hear it will just hear the compliment. I tend to think that it's probably better to level set this as, I care about you, and let me tell you what I see. What I see is that you are not meeting the standards that I would expect to see in this role. You know, there can be denial at this point. There can be tears. There can be a range of things. But, you know, you're not meeting the standards in these ways. And I think you've got great potential. I'd like to help you think about something where you can feel proud of yourself and you can excel. So if you really just think about yourself as helping them reach their potential, everybody's got to have some, you know, superhero or some super talent. Right? Mm-hmm. It may not be anything related to epidemiology or research. Always just repeat to yourself that you're helping them reach their potential. Don't beat around the bush. You know, I mean, if I wanted to be a dancer with the New York Ballet, I just need someone to say, you do not fit the phenotype of a professional ballerina. Right. You are not flexible. You are not graceful. You cannot dance or hold a beat, but let's talk about what you're good at. You enjoy detail-oriented work. Perhaps we could sit you in front of a computer all day where you type in numbers, and then you can feel like a success.
My experience just participating on Study Section as like an ad hoc member. So I've been on a lot of different, you know, sat on a lot of different special emphasis panels and blah, blah, blah. And I find that the way that the meeting goes is so driven by the chair.
Yes.
By the chair setting the tone, by the chair keeping things on time, by the chair you know, reining in conversations that are going off the track, you know, reminding people score driving points or what we're talking about here. You know, we don't need to repeat anything that someone else said. Did you feel like you were kind of naturally suited to do that? Were you watching other chairs when you participated and said, like, that works and that doesn't?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I had the benefit of serving when Penny was the chair and, you know, being present. And she did an excellent job of moving the discussions forward. And I also think what drives a successful study section is actually the input of the SRO up front. So making it very clear what the expectations were and asking the chair to communicate them, since the chair is the peer of the individuals in the room. But, you know, having that discussion and that expectation that, you know, this is what the point of discussion is. When we have heard all of the points, we simply restate the points back, and then everybody can then vote their conscience. And the problem is, you know, these have implications for people's lives. You know, I've been on the receiving end of at least 8 to 10 not discussed grants. And it's unpleasant and it's really strange when you see comments that are like, oh, this grant is fine. Or you see a limited weakness. And then you think, okay, well, the SRO should have demanded better comments as far as the weaknesses.
Could you give a few tips that you've learned, not from your grant writing experience, but from your experience on Study Section, things that maybe you wouldn't have known if you hadn't sat on Study Section?
So from the perspective of a reviewer, when I'm going through a grant, especially if I don't know very much about the topic, I'm using a formula to rate that. And I'm using a formula that says, you know, is the study population adequate? Is, you know, have they addressed rigor and reproducibility? I'm essentially using the review criteria formula. So to the extent that you can make it as crystal clear as possible that you have addressed each of these things, you're making this an easier read for me. So I think tip number one is to pay attention to the explicit criteria on which the grant is being reviewed and be crystal clear and speak in plain language. I have a colleague who I have written a number of grants with as MPI in the last few years, and we've been very successful. And what I've taken from her writing, which I think was different from my writing, is that she speaks very clearly and in plain language. And I remember from graduate school, there were times where I'd spend an hour, not an hour, but, you know, where I'd spend a ton of time on a sentence because I'm like, oh, this is going to be beautiful. And this is going to be just poetic. And then I remember my advisor in graduate school saying, you know, what are you even trying to say? I don't know what this is. And I'm thinking, I spent the most time ever on this. And I was like, you know what? Because I didn't need to. I needed to present this as if I were having a conversation with an intelligent person. You know, if I'm reviewing a grant on omics for you, I don't know what this means. I don't understand any of it. I'm looking to see, you know, what I've learned. Like, you know, are you replicating it in another sample? You know, is this hypothesis driven? If it's not, why is discovery important? So I'm using a formula if I don't understand the topic. And so please don't layer on top of it by using a ton of jargon.
So, Mercy, you are clearly committed to service and leadership. And, you know, the number of society committees you're on and you lead and editorial board and study section. Can you talk about that?
Yeah. You know, it's interesting. A couple of years ago, I attended this Stanford alumni. It was a Stanford Black alumni meeting, and they asked the question of, are you who you say you are? They had us go through these activities to figure out who do you say you are? And do your actions align with who you say you are? Tied into that, what do you want to be known for doing? And some time ago, I think in part because I've really been the beneficiary of such great mentorship and so much investment by so many people, I have been very committed to the idea of who I say I want to be is I want to be a helpful person. I want to help other people. I have accepted long ago that I'm, you know, sort of middle average intelligence. And so, you know, I'm not going to get a MacArthur Genius Grant and not getting anybody's Nobel Prize. However, the way in which I could make a significant impact in the world is to help other people maximize their potential. And if my skill set is in being able to see the big picture and helping people organize themselves and interact in ways in which they can maximize their chance of success, who I want to be is a helpful person. So how can I help you? How can I help you achieve your goals? And so to that end, ever since then, and that was maybe 4 or 5 years ago, I have decided to pare down the yeses to opportunities that set me up to be in a position to be maximally helpful to other people. Okay. And also to recognize that, you know, there's a limited amount of time in anybody's day. The question comes down to what is the best I can do in the time that has been allotted to me. Mm-hmm. When I say I can review 3 grants in a day, that's a terrible feeling, but I can comfortably do 2. And that's because I'm going to spend 2 hours reviewing your R01. I'm going to read it in 1 hour and I'm going to write up my comments in 1 hour.
How do you do that?
Because I only have 2 hours per grant. If it takes me longer than 1 hour to read your standard R01, it means I'm reading slowly because I'm confused. And then as far as writing for an hour, it's not my job to rewrite your grant. I'm going to hit the big picture things in that 1 hour. And I literally have a timer to say,
do you?
Yes. But, you know, I just need to hit the big picture to be as helpful as possible. So, you know, anything you say yes to, you have to say no to something else, which is why we always encourage people to have an individual development plan or a career advancement plan. Ask yourself, in what way does saying yes to this serve you in achieving your short, medium, and long-term goals? My goal, who I want to be and who I want to be remembered for, is someone who helped other people. So will taking this role in some way set me up to help other people, or will it help other people directly? Because that's what's going to bring me joy. And knowing this, I only have this amount of time to contribute to it. So knowing that I have this amount of time to contribute to it, can I do the job justice? If I can't, it has to be, this isn't the right time, no. If I can, I say, hey, look, this is what I can give. we were working on a big grant. And in the course of working on the grant, I lost my eyesight in one eye.
What?
So bright light hurt it, couldn't see. It's like, I'm fine. We're just working on a grant. And I just was walking around with my hand over my eye. I was like, I don't have time to get help over this. I need to get the grant in. So it wasn't until it was accepted by Commons, everything else, that I sent my doctor a text and was like, hey, can I come over? And she saw me. She didn't even touch me. And she was like, let me call my friend who's an ophthalmologist to see you right away. Yeah, I mean, I had iritis, inflammation of the iris. You can't see, but I was like, it's okay. I can type with one hand, and I'm going to get this done. And do you know what happened with that grant, Lisa? Not discussed. I lost my eyesight.
Right.
And do you know what happened with the grant? It wasn't in the top 50%. And I was thinking, okay, the lesson here is, don't compromise your health over a grant because it may be the best thing you put out there and it may be not discussed. It was not discussed. Obviously, I am still triggered by this.
Right.
I lost my eyesight.
You want to talk about fun stuff?
Certainly. I think you've got fun questions for me.
Mercy, is there anything that you like that you're embarrassed to admit that you like?
Well, I mean, no. I mean, I watch a lot of crime shows, but I don't know that I'm embarrassed to admit that I like FBI shows. I don't like cooking and I don't like vegetables. I'm very embarrassed to admit that I don't like vegetables.
You are such a health conscious person.
Yes. Mm-hmm. It's torture. I don't like, I just choke it down because it's an obligation.
And then you tell your kids, like, broccoli's good, kids.
Oh my God, the carrot thing. My daughter loves carrots. She's like, here, have one, mommy. And I'm like, oh my God, I can't even chew a raw carrot. I'll eat them cooked. But I was like, it's the worst. But carrots are great for you. And I think they're very important for their beta carotene.
Right. When you were a kid, what did you want to be when you grew up?
Oh, I wanted to be an author. I love writing. I love reading. I don't ever write, ever anymore. except grants and manuals of operation. But no, I love fiction and I love literary fiction. So yeah, no, I wanted to be a writer.
Until you were how old?
When the Krebs cycle did me in college in human biology, I was like, I think I'm done. Maybe I'll go over to the English department and think about writing. But then I realized that my interest in medicine and health coupled with my interest in writing could lead me to do research and I could possibly be successful. Don't tell anybody, but I mean, the Krebs cycle, seriously, the Krebs cycle really did me in. I couldn't do it.
Yeah, really? Mm-hmm. Acetyl-CoA? You were
no,
just like, I can't. Okay.
No.
All right.
That didn't work for me.
But so, then obviously it clicked at some other point.
Did it? Or did I avoid it and I have memorized things?
Okay. All right.
Physiology is fine, right? I've memorized things, but yeah, no.
Mm-mm. I remember in college when I took a biology class, one of the labs, so this was at UNC, one of the labs was that I had to listen to bird calls and be able to identify the bird.
Oh, and it was my.
It was impossible.
Oh, my.
And, you know, they taught you little tricks like, you know, this bird, listen, like this bird says, Peter, 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 Peter. And you're like, oh, got it, Peter, Peter. And then this other one is like, you know, shloo, shloo, shloo. But then once you're out of the lab,
wow.
You're just like, was that a Peter? I don't know. It sounded like a shloo.
Oh.
Yeah, it was terrible. It was like the, you know, five most common North Carolina birds. And I was like, I don't fucking give
no,
a shit about these
no.
birds. I'm going to say the name of something and you tell me yes or no.
Okay.
Hot tubs.
Yes.
Las Vegas.
Nah, I've had a lot of fun there in the past, but I'm old now.
Black licorice.
Oh, no. Oh, my God.
Oh. Anise?
Anise?
I don't know.
No.
Yeah. It's terrible, right?
Horrible.
Yeah.
And you know, they put that, it's that same seed that's in the tea that's supposed to help you produce more breast milk. I suffered through that.
Yes.
I suffered through that so that I could feed my children and they'd have a healthy start. And you know how I was rewarded? A colicky baby.
Country music.
Nah.
Disney.
Yes, I wanted to go on a Disney cruise. And now I think they'd probably pay me to go on a Disney cruise because why, as an epidemiologist, would I get on anybody's cruise ship?
A 90-degree weather.
Yes.
Microsoft Word.
Love it. I mean, we became one during a dissertation.
Mm-hmm. The movie Dirty Dancing.
I love it.
Yeah,
yes.
Me too. Madonna.
Yeah, yes. She brought me great joy when I was young.
Inspiring quotes in an email signature.
No.
Do you know the people that,
yes.
Do you know what I mean, right?
Okay, no. I'm recently sending out notices about appropriate use of email and clear, direct, succinct emails. I don't aim to be inspired. I'm trying to get some instructions. No.
Pumpkin flavored anything.
Sure. Pumpkin flavored coffee, oh. Yes.
Mm-hmm. The term impactful.
I don't think that's grammatically correct. No. Yeah. I mean, people always say I'm going to do impactful science, and I don't think that that's an appropriate use of the word. No.
Okay.
I don't think that's correct.
Nice. I knew that you would have a firm
stance. I have
stance
a firm
on
stance.
That.
No, you can do high impact work. You don't need to turn it into impactful. Please don't.
Mercy, I'm so happy that we could talk.
I'm so glad. I hope that I'll come to Pittsburgh soon. I have good friends there and I have a little cousin there. And so, yeah, the last time I was in Pittsburgh, I never knew how beautiful it was.
It's gorgeous.
It's gorgeous. I had no, you get this, impression that you hear like steel town, gritty steel town.
Yeah.
We showed up. And I was like, what are all these green hills? So no, yeah. I'm trying to come back soon.
Okay. Mm-hmm. That's awesome.
I'll let you know when I'm there. This has been so fun. Thank you.
Thank you.
You pulled me out of my bad mood from spending the day with the
kids. Me too. You pulled me out of mine. He was like,
"Yeah,
I'm live.
I'm really not a cat." And I think everybody else's poker face was equally amazing.
Yes. The way that the guy was like, "I think you have a filter on."
He was amazingly professional.
And then I liked how the cat's eyes were like
panicked. He was just, his eyes, that was the best. So that's the thing. We keep watching it over and over, and it's funnier and funnier when you get into the details of the panicky look in his eyes. And then
you like stare at the top person and like watch that guy. He just doesn't even, straight face.
Is he the other attorney thinking, I've got this in the bag?
Right.
Or was he the client who was like, I can't believe I paid for this shit. I'm going to jail.
He's from a cat judge.
He's like, I can't believe this. Mm-hmm.